Thank you for downloading the Dunkcast, featuring some of the best bits from City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Hello, this is Duncan Barks. Thank you again for downloading the Dunkcast, featuring some of the stuff we've been up to on the City Talk Breakfast Show at City Talk 105.9. I'm going to keep it brief, if that's all right for you, because I'm still battling a sore throat. So I will tell you, on this week's podcast, you will hear some conversations regarding Ringo Starr. He was awarded Freedom of the City about 2 decades ago. He's still yet to pick up his gong. A fresh campaign has been launched and backed by West Lancashire MP Rosie Cooper to get Ringo back into Liverpool and to forgive and forget, following his comments on the Jonathan Ross show. You can hear my conversation with Rosie Cooper a little bit later on. The government report on the conduct of Wirral Council and their consultation, though some might argue lack of it, regarding the closure of libraries on the Wirral. The government report was released during the week. We spoke to the news editor of the Wirral Globe, Justin Dunn, to get his take not only on the ongoing saga, but also how Wirral Council comes out of the report. Hear my conversation with Justin Dunn a little bit later on. I was also joined in the studio by a lady by the name of Carol Eden. Carol Eden has put together a charity calendar for 2010. You can find out how and why. As this podcast continues, there's a group of old people who aren't happy about the Christmas presents they get every year from their relatives. They've launched a campaign, campaigning for exciting Christmas presents. I had quite a lot to say about this. You can hear what I said a little bit later on. And of course, we finished the Dunkcast, with a almost legendary Duncan's Donut regarding the so-called pinkification of girls. Thank you as ever for your support. Thank you for downloading. And enjoy the Dunkcast or the Dunkcast.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
It's now 8:09. If you've been online over the last 24 hours, you will know one of the questions we've been posing on our Facebook page and also our Twitter feed is whether or not it's time to offer Ringo Starr an olive branch, a branch of peace, to get him back in the city. We've been asking you, would you offer him a warm welcome? And some of the comments make fascinating reading. We'll go through some of them in a few moments' time. But there is a fresh plan afoot to get Ringo back in Liverpool to accept his Freedom of the City scroll. Someone who's backing the campaign is West Lancashire MP Rosie Cooper, and she joins me this morning. Morning, Rosie.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you as ever. Why are you backing this plan, then?
Well, in essence, I suggested that the Beatles got the Freedom of the City 25 years ago. Mm. It was a little controversial at the time, but it was a good thing for the city. I do know that Ringo's made those rather silly comments. And in a way, his way of apologising and drawing a line under that would be to come and get the, his freedom scroll and put it to bed. Frankly, I suppose I'm still rather amazed that two of the Beatles still haven't got those scrolls 25 years later.
All right, let's talk about Ringo Starr. I mean, the one thing that when you talk about Ringo in 2009, you can't really have a conversation, and you've alluded to this, without actually thinking back to some of the comments he made on the Jonathan Ross show. Let's just have a reminder of what he said.
Are there any things you miss about not being a Liverpool boy?
No. I was a child, I grew up in Liverpool, but, you know, family members are in Liverpool, but,
you know, I love your honesty.
I had to tell the audience, Sam, it was so exciting over the weekend, I was that close to come back.
So what do you reckon, Rosie, you know, not thinking properly or just an opportunity for a cheap laugh?
Oh, maybe an opportunity for a cheap laugh, but, I mean, Liverpool made Ringo who he is. It's part of his history, his upbringing. And more than that, you know, especially now, cities, you know, the regeneration, it's changed out of all proportion. And, I mean, I know he did come back for the Capital of Culture year, which led to a few of those things. But overall, it's bigger than all of that. Liverpool is bigger than all of that.
Yeah. I mean, you made the point he was back in the city for the Capital of Culture, yeah? I mean, there he was singing his heart out on the roof of St George's Hall. He could have picked up his Freedom of the City scroll then.
Yeah, I'm just absolutely astounded that the council or whoever just didn't put it together and do it. But perhaps the people who were there just didn't remember that he'd never collected it.
You're backing this plan to kind of like this fresh plan to get Ringo back in the city and once and for all giving him this freedom of the city gong. Shall I go through some of the remarks we've had in on our Facebook feed, which make interesting reading? I mean, I'm not going to read all of them out, but we pose a question. You know, we ask people, our listeners, what do you think about this? They range from everything from Colin Banton saying, off with his head. Oh, that's already being done. Andy Duff, let's face it, Ringo has been a bit of a dingo. Personally, I'd rather play bingo or learn a foreign lingo. You see the quality of listeners I've got here, Rosie. Elsewhere, someone says, I wish Henry Winkler played the drums in the Beatles instead of Ringo. You need to know that Henry Winkler, of course, is the actor who plays the Fonz, who's in Panto this year. Seems to be getting more love from Liverpool than Ringo does at the moment.
Absolutely. Every time I turn a page of the Liverpool Echo, it spots Henry wherever he is.
Oh, no,
spots the Fonz.
He's everywhere. And then we've got someone here, Richard Ashworth, saying Ringo is welcome anytime because artists make great art. People turn them into saints. He is just a man. You're disappointed with him because he does not comply to the rules of being an ambassador for Liverpool. So there's a slightly different view there. I mean,
I think it's
a mixed bag.
Absolutely. And it never ever was going to be anything else. But frankly, let me tell you, as somebody who, and let's go back to the 80s, who represented Liverpool as Lord Mayor in America and places afar, people just remember Liverpool for a few reasons. The Beatles, Liverpool Football Club, whatever. You're not going to erase the Beatles from Liverpool's history. You're not going to erase them as individuals. They are, and they may very well be, flawed human beings who do stupid things. But out there on the world stage, they are a presence for good. And I really say to you, why did I ever? Because I'm actually an Elvis fan. So why did I ever propose the Beatles for the freedom of the city all those years ago? I'll tell you why. Because I went to Memphis to, if you like, do the Elvis Trail. And when I was there, everywhere I went in Memphis, there was Elvis. There was acknowledgements of Martin Luther King, who you'll remember. Died at was shot at the Lorraine Motel, Sun Studios. This was a city in a time of deprivation, which was having a big tourist trade based on the people who'd visited, died, or lived there, and great musical people like not just Elvis, but W.C. Handy and the blues and all that kind of stuff. And when I saw that, I saw a city, and you'll forgive me if I use this expression, it was the one that was in my head at the time. I thought they were living off the dead of that city. And here we are in Liverpool. We had four young men who were at the top of their game, worldwide recognition, and it doesn't matter what they thought. They represented Liverpool on the world stage, and that needed to be recognised. And I've got to say, all credit to him. Paul came and collected the scroll. Yoko has since collected hers, and I think we should just complete the job.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger question here, and I think it's right, because it's the bigger person who offers the kind of like the olive branch or the branch of peace, because I do think people do feel let down by Ringo over the last 2 years. But, of course, the bigger question is whether or not he actually wants this thing.
Well, that...
You can make all of the approaches on the planet, but if he's not interested, you're on a hiding to nothing, aren't you?
Absolutely. Well, if that's for him to say, and 25 years later, it's for him to either accept or not. But, you forget in this case that there's also George Harrison, and maybe his wife or his son would want to collect it. People need to make the offer, and it's up to them. But Liverpool and the Beatles are synonymous, and we can have a daily view of this, that, and the other, but the reality is, on the worldwide stage, they and us are synonymous, and we need to be much bigger than that. They get the offer, and that is if the City Council will agree to it. That's for them as well. But I believe we should just do it. Let's put this to bed. We don't want all this nonsense with Ringo going on and on and on. They are great for the city.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
We're talking about words this morning because I like words. One of my favourite words is bosom. Not because it's dodgy. Bosom is the kind of word you can't say without actually smiling. Say it to yourself.
Bosom.
Yeah, you see, there's a little smile in your voice. Say it again.
Bosom.
It works. I remember once I was on a school trip to France and I did something rather naughty that involved chucking stones off a cliff and not realising there were some French people below. But you know what they made us do? They made us sit in this hotel room and copy out the definition of the letter A, which is the first, obviously the first bit in the dictionary. And it took us 2.5 hours.
Really?
It's one hell of a punishment.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Well, over the last several months, we've been talking about a story here on City Talk Breakfast regarding residents on the Wirral, many of whom were in a fight with the local council to keep their libraries open. It's been an ongoing saga. Someone who's been following the story for his newspaper is the news editor of the Wirral Globe, Justin Dunn, and he's on the line. Morning, Justin.
Morning, Duncan.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for your time. Early doors on a Tuesday morning. It's very hard to know where to start with this, Justin, because, I mean, there will be some people who aren't Wirral residents who'll be listening to this thinking, well, you know, I've heard something about the library situation over there on the Wirral, not entirely sure what it's about. So just give us a very quick background piece.
Well, what happened was, Duncan, is that 12 months ago, the council came up with what it called a strategic asset review, which was to look at the buildings it owns right across the board and to see if they could hopefully close some of them down and save some cash. This include museums, it include office blocks, and as we now know, it also included 11 libraries. Well, actually included 13 libraries to begin with, but that was narrowed down to 11. But they didn't say that to start with. They just said fewer but better facilities for Wirral, and then they quietly slipped in the fact that it included almost half of our library provision. This did not go down well, as I'm sure you can appreciate.
Well, absolutely, and we know that various campaigns were set up and there were protests taking place. I remember very clearly pictures outside Wallasey Town Hall of people holding up their banners and whatnot. What is interesting about this is a couple of months ago we know that Wirral Council did effectively a U-turn, but they did a U-turn after they'd seen the site of a report that had been put together by Sue Charteris on behalf of the government.
That's right. What happened was the draft report by Sue Charteris was received by the council on July the 27th. It was only allowed to be seen by a select few people, senior officers and senior members of the cabinet, which is the ruling committee. Nobody was allowed to know, other than those people, what was in that report. It was kept under lock and key. On September the 30th, it was announced, very surprisingly, that the council was going to keep the libraries open after all. We've since learned that on October the 1st, this report was due to be published by the government. So interesting timing, you might think. Mm. And the report that was which was finally released yesterday, all 90 pages of it, I don't think there's a page in it that isn't critical of Wirral Council and the way it's gone about this process. It's essentially said that it didn't consult people properly, it didn't consider them properly, and it didn't ask them what they think. Interestingly enough, the Secretary of State, Ben Bradshaw, would have had to make a decision on this, but of course now he doesn't have to because the council, in its wisdom, decided to scrap its closure plan.
I mean, the timetable regarding Wirral Council's decision to do a U-turn speaks for itself. You've been covering this story throughout the majority of yesterday afternoon. I was watching with interest your various updates on the Wirral Globe website. Various people have been giving their viewpoints on this, including Conservative councillors on the Wirral who have been very much opposed to these cuts taking place in the first place, and some of whom have been leading various campaigns as well. What has been interesting, though, is some of the fallout from this, including various people I know you've spoken to, the deputy leader of the council, Simon Holbrook, and also Councillor Steve Fawkes, who's a leader of the council. What have they been saying to you?
Well, they're obviously disappointed in what the report says, because it essentially criticises them and their plan. I think the most important aspect of the report that's come out yesterday is that it's shown that consultation does matter, that you have to go to the public when you've got such a swinging regime of cuts planned, that you have to consult people properly. And there was massive anger on this one. I've never seen a reaction locally like this. There were some 60,000 signatures, which is a huge amount of people saying, no, you're wrong, think again. They've they've got egg on their faces. That's quite obvious, and I think it's going to take quite a bit for them to get that reputation back, if at all possible. The other interesting part, of course, is that all of this was going to take place in a year where there was no local elections, which the opposition, the Tories, understandably feel was trying to be pushed through when nobody could, bring them to account. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know. But the sceptic in me, which is what I'm paid to do, thinks that is entirely possible.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, what I found interesting yesterday, I was reading at length the statement released by the leader of Wirral Council, Councillor Steve Fulkes, and there are elements here of someone who's spitting his dummy out of the pram, because you've got him saying those who lobbied to keep their local library open have got what they wanted, but the silent majority who do not use their library, who do not want to see their council tax increase, and who might have used one of the new neighbourhood centres because they were more attractive, more conveniently located, and open longer hours are definitely the losers. He's not being very graceful, is he?
Well, I find the problem with talking about these shiny new centres is that they're not there. It's all very well closing down the libraries and promising jam tomorrow, but the problem with this is that they were just going to close the libraries and then start looking at sites and then start perhaps building them. But we don't know that was going to happen. And it does seem like a bit of an oxymoron saying we're going to save money by closing these sites so we can spend more money on opening new ones. People weren't buying that. It may well have been absolutely true. I have no reason to doubt Steve Fulkes. He's essentially a good man. But people didn't understand the idea of closing something down and then embarking on a program of rebuilding sites in vague areas, and no one's quite sure what they were going to do.
My final question is this. You're news editor of the Wirral Globe. You know the Wirral political scene intimately. You mentioned that the deputy leader and the leader have got egg on their faces. It's going to take a while for that damage to be repaired. Just give me a sense of how much damage you think this has done to the current administration on the Wirral.
Well, I must say, I don't think it's just the cabinet that looks bad on the back of this Sue Charteris report. It's also senior officers in the council who must have been advising them on legal aspects of it. Don't forget, this report actually says that if the cuts had gone through, the council would have been in breach of its statutory duties as regards library provision. That means it would have been acting illegally. Now, politicians are advised by highly, highly paid senior officers in the council. I'd like to know, and the council isn't saying, by the way, because it's refused to issue any kind of statement whatsoever on this, who was advising and who got it wrong? That's the problem. Politically, I think, we've got a hung council at the moment. I honestly don't know how much that's going to change. The Conservatives did quite well in the last local elections. We'll just have to wait and see.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barr.
Wirral Council have done a U-turn. They wanted to close 11 libraries across the Wirral. Looks like they've done a U-turn and the libraries are going to remain open.
It's great that, the campaigning, the petitioning, the protesting, the lobbying, it's all come good, and this is a victory for people power.
It is a victory for people power. It's a victory for common sense.
They've had to bow to public pressure. What does amaze me is they're now saying that it's not a U-turn. They're claiming it's decisive management. Interpret that as you will.
Well, I'll interpret it as a load of old guff.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
I was brought up, and I suspect you were brought up as well, if someone bought you a gift, you would be grateful. You might not even like it, but at least you smile and say thank you, because that's what decent, well brought up people do. But not in the case of these pensioners. Now, I don't want to be accused of bashing OAPs, because that would be morally wrong. But tell me what you reckon about this. Right, there's a load of OAPs who have become a little bit stroppy, and they've decided to ban boring presents this Christmas. Their definition of boring presents: tartan socks, ties, and bubble bath. They don't want them. They say they're boring. They have amazed relatives by demanding more exciting gifts this year. They are so incensed at receiving what they describe as thoughtless Christmas gifts year in, year out. They have launched an advertising campaign. They say they want to put a stop to the worrying trend of older people routinely ending up with all of the, their words, not mine, rubbish presents. How ungrateful. They are members of the Southwark Circle, a community group which fights for pensioners' rights in South London. Good God, you can imagine it now, can't you? All of those Zimmer frames queuing down the road, the smell of mothballs in the air. as they lobby for discounts on Ovaltine. Stan Hardy, who's 89, said he had already built up an endless supply of ties, adding, "We've all got drawers full of ties. We're saying if you're going to spend your money, for pity's sake, spend it on something we want. The group wants friends and family to shell out for things such as internet lessons or practical gifts like garden tools or West End theatre tickets." Well, I'll tell you why you're getting ties, mate. Because you can get a tie for a tenner. You want a West End theatre ticket, it's 50 quid. Is it just me this morning, or is this incredibly ungrateful? I mean, what do you want? A motorbike? Roller skates? You want someone to buy you a bucking Bronco? Keep you happy in your OAP's home? Goodness sake. A tweed gift set is a perfectly acceptable gift if you're an OAP. How very ungrateful.
The issues that matter to you. News, reaction, analysis, great conversation, and a healthy dose of opinion. This is City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks on City Talk 105.9.
At the tail end of July, I was joined in the studio by a lady who was putting together a charity calendar. Her name is Carol Eden, and she's back in my studio this morning. Morning, Carol.
Morning, Duncan.
Good to see you. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Marvellous. Can I say, looking at December in your 2010 calendar, you're looking magnificent. Right, for those people who weren't listening a few months ago, you were putting together a calendar for some incredibly worthwhile reasons for a disease called, have I got this right, Behçet's?
That's right, yes.
Okay, just outline what the condition is.
It's a condition that the victims get a disease that attacks their own body. Their own body actually eats away at itself. So there's lots of symptoms of it.
And this is not something that you've got, is it?
No, my daughter.
So you're inspired, obviously, by your daughter's plight to put something together to raise money for further research into this particular condition. It's been a bit of a journey, hasn't it?
Just a bit, yeah. Just a little bit.
Well, why did you settle on the idea of a charity calendar, first off?
We heard the Calendar Girls was coming up to its 10th year anniversary.
Yeah.
And that's where the idea come from. We thought, being clever, we'll get one put together as well.
And you've done it, because I've got one here in my sweaty little hands. I mean, certainly there's a lot of logistical stuff you've got to think about here. You've got to secure the services of a photographer. You've got to sort out your print. But also, most importantly, you've got to find people who are happy to pose in various shots. Good God, who's January 2010? Who's that lady?
She is actually one of the nurses.
She really? How splendid. You've got to persuade people to take part in this. How did you do that?
A bit of a bully,
yeah.
Coaxing,
yeah.
Any way I could, but they were good. They All were right. really good.
And there's also another lady in my studio this morning, and I believe you're Mrs. February, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
What's your name, madam?
Amlyn.
Were you bullied or were you willingly happy to take part in this?
Willingly.
What was it like? Because a lot of us have seen the movie Calendar Girls. We've seen the stage show as well. We all remember the famous quote, "I think we're going to need some bigger buns." What I love about the Calendar Girls film is that, they had a few glasses of wine before, to be blunt, taking their kit off. Did you apply the same methods?
No, we had tea and we had coffee and we got our kit off.
The calendar is out now. This is a great calendar. We're going to go through all of this, right? Because it's not just ladies in this calendar either. We've got to make that point. So, Carol, you're January. Well, no, you're not January. You're December. We'll get to you at the end. But we got one of the nurses here,
yeah.
Who is January, who's looking magnificent. Is she listening this morning?
I hope so. Yeah, she knows.
Whoever you are, Miss January, you look fantastic. Then, of course, we got this lady here who's February. Who's March?
March is that lady comes from Essex. She came down from Essex.
Yeah.
To do that calendar.
Is she a friend of yours?
She's a friend, yes.
What a good friend. Then you've got April, who's... you've got a bloke here.
That's my grandson.
That's your grandson, who's wearing a hard hat and a tool belt and a pair of boots and, to be blunt, not much else.
True.
Now, how old is your grandson?
He's 20.
How did you persuade him to do this? Was it a case of, like, granny says?
He didn't know till the day he turned up. He thought he was coming to do a job in the hotel.
See, that's quite a brave thing for a 20-year-old to do, isn't it? Very quickly, October, we have two rear shots here. Who have we got here?
That lady's from Wales, and that man is actually a consultant in the Royal Liverpool Hospital.
You see, that's beautiful. You've actually got a consultant who works in the medical area who's prepared to do more than just, a normal job, but actually, to be blunt, get his kit off. Did he take much persuading?
Not at all, no.
Yeah, brilliant. Right. All right, and finally, Carol, there's you in December looking, quite alluring with your feather boa. And various other people as well. Right, I urge people listening to City Talk Breakfast to get a copy of this, because just outline what the money's going to be used for.
The money is going to be used, it's to research Becher's disease.
Yeah.
That we've got a professor here in Liverpool that is an expert in the disease. And they've now just, they're opening a centre of excellence in Liverpool here, so everything raised will go towards that. We've also got whatever we raise on that, the Met Office have agreed to match what we raise on that too.
That's fantastic. So the full amount you raise will actually be doubled, yeah?
It'll be doubled, yeah.
Which is great news. How's Debbie?
She hasn't been too bad. She just had an MRI scan done that showed something up on her brain, so she's about to see a neurosurgeon. And she's got to have another blast of chemo done before Christmas. But the professor thinks now she has actually got to go ahead now and have a bone marrow transplant and see if that'll help.
And she must be chuffed a bit that her mum has gathered together a gaggle of people, good-looking men and women, and actually put this charity calendar together.
She was okay till she got to December and saw her mum.
Oh, I think it looked magnificent. Right. How much does it cost?
It's £6.
And how do people get hold of a copy?
They would have to get hold of a copy through me, but there's a donation website that's there that they can get hold of a copy.
Okay, which is www.justgiving.com/Carol with an E at the end, Eden. That's www.justgiving.com/Carol with an E, Eden. I'll tell you what, we'll put a link to that website from our City Talk website, if that's all right with you, so people can definitely get hold of a copy. Well, listen, thank you very much both for coming in, and you all look magnificent, and
thank you.
And here's to many sales for your calendar for 2010.
In a world full of bungling bureaucrats, power-crazed politicians, jumped-up pen pushers, and the plain old stupid, one man fights a lone battle for sanity, armed with a sword of vitriol and a shield of common sense. Duncan Bach takes on the Pillocks the only way he can, by awarding them the title of Duncan's Donut.
Now, I've read some guff in my life, but this has to take the biscuit, quite literally. Now, if you're listening to this and you have a daughter, and maybe she's under the age of 10 or maybe over the age of 10, you'll find this of interest. The pinkification, that's right, you heard me correctly, the pinkification of girls' toys is damaging their development, according to a campaigner who has called for a boycott of the Early Learning Centre. Rows of pink toys and outfits are encouraging an obsession with body image and make girls think beauty is valued over brains, says Emma Moore, who's a mother. Her campaign has been backed by Ed Mayo, the former government consumer czar and author of Consumer Kids, How Big Business is Grooming Our Children for Profit. He said, there may be worse things to worry about, but I feel this colour apartheid is one of the things that sets children on two separate railway tracks. One leads to higher pay and the higher status, and one doesn't. What a load of grade A guff. Now listen, it's in a little girl's genes to go for the colour pink. It stands to reason. Now, I've got a little girl. She's 5. She loves nothing better than playing with her felt-tip pens and drawing pictures and colouring stuff in. She always goes for pink. Why? Because it's a nice colour, Daddy. That's what it is. Absolute rubbish. Who are these people who look for problems where they don't exist? The pinkification of girls' toys is damaging their development, according to this woman who's a campaigner, and she's calling for a boycott of the Early Learning Centre. Listen, little girls love pink things. It stands to reason. It's got nothing to do with how they fare in later life. Stupid woman. Well, all I have to say to you, madam, and Ed Mayo, the former government consumer czar, an author of Consumer Kids, How Big Business is Grooming Our Children for Profit, you two donuts!
Duncan's Donuts.
Find out more about City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks at citytalk.fm. We hope you've enjoyed the Dunk Cast. If you have, please download again next week.